Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, you're in luck. We like professional wrestling too. I always mess up that intro for some reason. And I'm Jeff Hawkins. This is Shake Them Ropes. Along with me, as always, Chris Novembrino. A little bit early on Friday again. This is a good thing, I think. How's it going, kid?
They call me the Nov Dog Hawkins. I'm all right. I'm
Nov Dog.
I'm rocking in the free world, Hawkins.
Or at least call me the Breeze. I'm just heading down the road.
Something like that.
Okay.
Something like that.
On top of the story, or on top of the show, a little news about me, kids, that next week there may not be a Shake Them Ropes. There may be. It's just going to depend how I feel over the weekend and on Friday. I have a tumor in my bladder, and they diagnosed that a few weeks ago. Kind of heard it alluded to here on the show that I've been going through some medical stuff of late. I go in for surgery on the 7th. I should be out on the same day and recovering. If I'm not in too much pain, we'll record Friday again because I have the day off. But, you know, well wishes and thoughts are welcome. Pity isn't. But, I've also been told that this is mostly something that smokers get, and I've never smoked. So if you're smoking, stop now, because you don't want to go through some of this stuff, especially if you're a male. And I've already alluded to it on Fightful and also on Fight Game, but I appreciate everybody's DMs about this. But we'll see what happens. We'll handle it from there. It happens to be our last show today. So be it. Chris and I either choose to move on or not. I don't think he wants. Chris, all this someday could be yours, young Simba. The circle.
What an exciting prospect that indeed is.
You and Rob
on a serious note here. One, yes, I of course wish you well. But two, look, if the people want me to do a Raw recap and stuff, like, look, if there's an appetite for it, I will keep this show going. I definitely know that there's a crossover between this show and my politics show, Don't Worry About the Government, available at patreon.com/DWATG.
Gotta get that. Use my health news to get a plug in for your Patreon.
Hawkins, I love you.
I am so proud.
How dare I? I love you, Hawkins.
I am so
Jeffrey,
proud
I love
of you.
You.
I have never been more proud of you than I am right now. As a matter of fact, if you had plugged the Shake Them Ropes Patreon, I would have made you an heir in my will.
Patreon.com/STR. Gotta go there.
No, it's patreon.com/shakethemropes, all one word.
Oh, okay, all one word. All one word. Don't put the spaces in, people. Don't put the spaces in. Especially, and leave the colons out as well.
You know what would be great is if I can't do a show next week, you do a 1 hour high wattage.
Oh, yes. The people are definitely owed a high wattage. I'm getting back. No, over on Don't Worry, I'm getting back into monologue shows or whatever. So I'll fire up a high wattage here this weekend. I've got some time.
If you don't want to put it on the Patreon,
for a long time, right? Like Lanza has been stifling the appearance of high wattage on the main feed. He's like, this show's too real for the main feed of Voices of Wrestling. It's too damaging to the brand. I've never agreed with any of that. I've always just thought that that's the narrow-minded thinking of narrow-minded people. Maybe next week we finally break the cycle.
You want to do a solo.
Isn't enough enough? Isn't it time for a change?
Yes, Owen. If you want to do a solo show next week, just let me know. I'll bail out on you. I'm fine with that.
No, if you're up to it, like dude, like no, it's like your show. If you're up to it, we should. But I'm just saying, if you're not up to it, and the people really want me to do a solo show, I who am I to deny your wishes here?
Plugged your Patreon and wishing me well.
I love you, Jeffrey. How dare you? How dare you?
Capitalism at its best. And also,
I know you should be proud of me. I feel like you are actually. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, trust me. Next week there's a commercial read, so you can do all of it yourself for all I care. Top story of all things, because there's not a lot this week other than talking about actual wrestling that happened. But Logan Paul is officially signed with the WWE, Chris. It looks like, and don't quote me on this, but it looks like SummerSlam is just going to be the Joe Bob Briggs school of sequels. When in doubt, do the same movie over again. This looks like it's going to be WrestleMania again for SummerSlam. Expected to be in some sort of feud with The Miz, of course. But overall, this is actually a smart move, I think. Logan Paul, as both of us thought, over-delivered at Mania. If he can bring his followers, what does he have, like 12 million followers on social media? If he can bring like a fourth of them, he quadruples the audience of Raw almost. So this is a savvy business move.
I think that WWE has found a formula that works for them, at least in the short to medium term, of bringing in B-tier celebrities and having spectacle shows. And it's not like they don't have a history of this dating back to the
80s. WrestleMania
1. right. Like, it's not like an unfounded, completely unprecedented sort of approach for WWE. That being said, I think that this continues to come at expense of building up future stars and people that you can kind of build the company around. And I was thinking a lot about that this week when the like John Cena Raw was on. And I was thinking about how impossible it is now for them to have a vehicle that produces another John Cena even.
No, I agree with you heavily in theory. And this is something I've been not Austin Theory. I've been yelling and railing about for decades, is that they always do the special attraction at the expense of their roster. And then they look around and then the only thing that they have to put on there are people against other special attractions. Like, it's very interesting that Pat McAfee, it looks like, is going to be getting a match at SummerSlam against Corbin. That's an interesting mix of styles right there. I mean, it's one of those things where, look, I like Pat McAfee a lot. You put him in there with Theory, who not exactly a ring general just yet, but getting better. But I mean, his first match was with Adam Cole, who is a ring general. And now you're putting him in there with Corbin, who is, look, he's a veteran. You can't deny that. He's better than I think a lot of people give him credit for as well. there's also a specific size difference between Theory and Cole and Baron Corbin vis-a-vis what Pat McAfee's used to. But it is interesting. And, you know, at this point, I think there's a small percentage of the fandom who want to see Pat McAfee get the belt, I think, off of Roman, because nobody else is that big of a star, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the problem with the Corbin match is that I don't know that we've really seen Corbin ever do anything remarkable outside of his standard WWE five moves. And McAfee, he needs a guy like an Adam Cole, who is pretty good at all the middle of the match sort of stuff, to help kind of pull McAfee's big spots together. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's going to be Corbin goes for his spots, McAfee goes for his spots, and maybe that's the type of match they want. I've come around to this idea that, like, this sort of works for their ratings. Ratings seem to be somewhat decent right now for them, and I think that there seems to be some, you know, McAfee's a draw, like, and he's a good wrestler. I don't really understand this Corbin pairing too well, to be completely honest.
Don't worry, kids. We'll get to that big AEW signing / debut from Forbidden Door when we get to the Lazy River. But yes, Claudio Castagnoli is with AEW. More on that later. Also signing with WWE, Valerie Lareda from Bellator, MMA fighter, model, exactly what you'd think. My only thought was, she posted a video after that. I'm just like, Chris, here's where Old Man Hawkins comes out. When did dressing for airplanes become dressing for the club? Exactly. Because
I think, well, okay, so here's my thought on this, right? Like, it costs so much to fly these days now that people people view it as a special occasion.
Oh yeah, but viewed it as a special occasion, it was like you'd wear, you know, shirt and tie. When I flew, I would do that when I was younger, because I always viewed it as a special, because I was raised that way. This is some of the stuff. She was posting herself in the airport, and I was just like, wow, that is that's going for Mile High Club possibly at times.
Well, people have different special occasions.
Well, no, that's true. I mean, it's odd, because it's like, I always like railing at people taking their shoes off on the plane. Cannot stand that. Do not stand that. Unless I see fresh, clean socks underneath, I don't approve of it. You know, people look like they're just rolling out of bed on the plane. Yeah. So that's Old Man Hawkins talking. Valerie Lareda.
Wait, what do you think the appropriate level of dress is for the airplane,
you know,
Hawkins?
I'm not
no,
sure.
No, I want to get these thoughts. These are important.
For men or women?
Let's go with men. I might be taking a flight here in September, perhaps. What should I wear? I
don't, you know, that's the problem, is I don't know, because I'm a long pants shirt that fits, doesn't have any graphics on, or
no graphics. Graphics they disrespect the decorum of the airplane.
Hold on, not necessarily graphics. I meant the kind of shirt that you might pick up at a truck stop or at Myrtle Beach, I don't think are appropriate type of things that might offend a child, which I've seen at times. I'm just like, ay. But then again, my worst flying experience was actually in Kansas City, where it's like, you know, when you're rooting for that middle seat not to be filled, and you get that, and then I had the person who was sitting in the seat on the aisle move to the middle seat so she could have two seats to herself, and I was by the window. I was like, I was aghast. I had never heard of such a thing before, but there she did. She sat there the entire time, watched her movie. I was like, really? You gave yourself two seats and you wouldn't give me any room? Okay, thanks a lot, lady.
I still don't really know what I'm supposed to be wearing on this flight, Hawkins. You're not like very good. I want the rules of decorum for an airplane,
Chris,
sir.
Chris, I think you personally, khakis, white button down, look like a missionary.
I've always considered the airplane to be sort of a shrine to the sky. You know what I mean?
Oh, so you're praying to your sky god on
yeah, no, okay. Yeah. I mean, who among us? Many of us have a sky god, you know, or the sun, you know, if you're kind of like old school.
Yeah.
Like, if you really think about it, what is an airplane but not some sort of shrine in the sky?
All right, we've gotten way too silly. Alan Five Angels has announced that his contract has run out with AEW. Does not mean he can't be back on a per basis deal, but looks to be hitting the indies again. This is a guy that outkicked his coverage, I think. It looked like they might have been doing something with him with that Adam Page / Lawnmower deal when they're really big into the Dark Order, but it looks like the Dark Order is getting a bit phased out here. And hey,
yeah, it seems like a bit of a dropped angle at this point.
Yeah, and look, he got two pretty good matches with Kenny Omega on national television. That should help his asking price. I mean, what more can he ask?
No, he's good. Yeah, he's demonstrated that he's a quality guy. You know, I think the Dark Order was sort of a blessing and a curse, right, for a lot of these guys, where it was good because it did allow them to sort of outkick their coverage, but it was bad because there really has been nowhere to go with being in Dark Order. Once you join Dark Order, you're just sort of in Dark Order. Leaving Dark Order doesn't lead to a bunch of hot feuds or anything. Dark Order's just kind of there. It's not bad. I mean, I enjoy the skits or whatever. It's just in terms of a building faction or a place to build beyond. No, Dark Order seems to be your last stop in AEW.
Yeah, I would agree. Numbers for the week. Forbidden Door looks to have gotten 127,000 buys on pay-per-view. AEW, 1,023,000 viewers for Blood and Guts, 18-49.36. Won the night in cable, 6 overall for the night. WWE NXT, 570,000 viewers, 0.11 in the demo. Raw, 1,951,000, 0.54 in the demo. Miz and Mrs., we put this on there for comparison to NXT and Rampage, 669,000 viewers, 0.21 in the demo. People love those types of shows. SmackDown, 2,231,000, 0.53 in the demo. And Rampage, 422,000, 18-49.12. With that, we're going to open up the Lazy River here. A lot of Lazy River to talk about today. We have ice cold thoughts from Forbidden Door. We have a preview of Money in the Bank, which happens on Saturday in Lost Wages. And just anything else that crosses your mind. I will start with something random, just to be random, and then we'll go into the big news. I've been watching Barbarian matches, Chris, and that dude is fantastic, and I love him. I watched Haku and the Barbarian versus the Rockers from WrestleMania 7. I hated the Powers of Pain.
The Faces of Fear.
The Faces of Fear are fantastic.
Faces of Fear, yeah. No,
three Faces of Fear. This is when they're
right. This is like sort of like a pilot run.
Yeah, but I mean, like watching like even like squash matches from like 1985 when the Barbarian first got into the company, or maybe it was 86. That dude always solid, always doing things off the top rope. I love me the Barbarian. I wish we had more wrestlers like the Barbarian at times, but we don't. So ice cold takes on Forbidden Door. Chris, did you get a chance to watch this?
I did. I did not get a chance to watch all of it, but I did watch a good deal of it. We were wrong about in terms of level of interest for New Japan. So like, let's eat our hat here. I don't want to be, like others and pretend or try to spin or rationalize it. Like, no, like we thought that this was going to underperform in terms of buys, and it didn't. It did pretty well. In terms of the actual show, a lot of the like the mixed man matches are the type of New Japan, you know, like multi-man matches that you just like kind of come to expect.
Schmazes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like, so like if you enjoy everyone who's in it, it's a romp. Yeah. Yeah. Schmaz, a romp. Yeah. It's okay. I liked, we were wrong about FTR. They ended up pulling it out
dead
here.
Wrong. I that was the most surprising thing of the night for me, was that FTR got all the tag championships. including because they are the AAA champs and because of the politics of New Japan and whatnot. No, that shocked the hell out of me. And that match was pretty damn good, I thought, too.
And that to me was sort of like the point where the card sort of picked up steam too. Because yes. Like Pac versus Miro versus Malakai Black versus Clark Connors, real good.
Connors getting a chant from the crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do any better than having to fill in for Ishii and then getting the crowd to start cheering for you after getting destroyed for half the match.
Yeah. Pretty good. Thunder Rosa, Tony Storm was a bit of a surprising outcome. I think I would have had Tony win here, but it was just, I mean, it's like, we're just going to stay in this holding pattern with Rosa, which, interesting, interesting.
I was surprised at how clean she won. Of interest to me was the fact that, this match started off dead and they eventually won the crowd over. Now, they didn't win them over to a standing ovation level, but they did win them over eventually. And that was good because they were fighting an uphill battle after my favorite match of the night, where were they on the card? I need to think about
it. They were after Bull Club versus Dudes with Attitude.
Okay. That was my favorite match of the night.
Oh, okay.
And that's Sting. And by the way, if you want to hear my hot takes, I did a whole hour and a half over on Fightful after the show. These are, again, ice cold takes, and I'm trying to give Chris his chance because I've had my chance to give my opinion. But I love Sting, and I never did before, really, in this thing. And this is hard to say for somebody of my generation. I find AEW Sting to be far more compelling than ECW Terry Funk. Although Terry Funk, far more important to the existence of ECW than Sting is to AEW. But AEW Sting is like a man who's been trying to catch up for 20 years of lost time. And I love him for it.
Terry Funk was middle-aged and crazy. And like Sting is on Medicare and yes, crazy. Yes. It's great.
That, and I loved El Fantasmo in this match. I thought he was great. I think make him a buck, make him the third buck. You know, why not? Because that dude working with, and God bless Sting. He forgot about the nipple spot, but that's okay. He didn't panic. He just went back in there, did the spot, killed El Fantasmo, got out of there. But El Fantasmo had me rolling. I've got to see some of him in Defy when I watched Tom Lawler and John Moxley, and you know that dude's solid on comedy, solid on the indie type of spot stuff. I think he's great, but that was my favorite match of the night. It's weird because New Japan does these types of endings that drive me nuts sometimes. Like in the six man with Shota Umino and Suzuki and Moxley and Kingston. Like they made Umino in that match and it was fantastic to watch. And you're watching, and it's like, God, they're giving this kid such a great rub. And then he does the stupid baby face thing where he turns his back on a guy, fires up and walks right into the Judas effect. And I just like, geek. I hate that ending, Chris. I hate that ending. And I also hate which match? Oh, I think it was it Cassidy and Ospreay?
Yeah, I feel like you're going to say Cassidy and Ospreay.
Which was the kick out at one, and then Orange Cassidy got nothing after that. And eventually, like, got tapped out or whatever. Was that him, or was that another match that I'm thinking of? But that one always gets me, too. It's the I kick out at one, but it's not that I've fought and I've exhausted myself. It's just the guy just puts on another move and ends up choking you out or whatever. I hate those two finishes in strong style wrestling drive me insane at times.
I liked Orange Cassidy versus Ospreay.
Yeah, it was a very good match.
Yeah, it was a very good match. I at a certain point I get tired of wanting the Orange Cassidy character to be just something it isn't, which I like. I'd like him to be a little bit more intense, a little like I would like it that when you eventually when you peel the orange, so to speak, that it, inside is something much more intense.
That it's all a feint to get you to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that is, especially when a title is on the line and he is getting desperate. I just think that for me, the character, the cool stuff, you know, the hands in the pants, you know, too cool for school stuff is really good for the early part of the match as a way of getting under the opponent's skin. But like
the sloth stuff later doesn't work though.
That's it doesn't work. Yeah. Right. I know. Like it's the one thing that hurts the psychology here. Like because obviously the sloth stuff is, even in a world of kayfabe, it's like a form of psychology. Like even in the kayfabe world, we know this man doesn't move this slowly. Right. So like it even in the world of kayfabe, it's not necessarily consistent. So I would love to see him do something else, but I only think that a criticism that he's not something that I'd like him to be can be so valid. So, you know, it was good. And within the contours of the type of match that Orange Cassidy likes to have, it was good. I just, as we got to the close here, it didn't get to kind of like the emotional intensity that it could have had because we're not necessarily consistent in the characterization with the guy.
I did love the Shibata visual with him, though. That was great.
Oh, right. I know. Like just the dichotomy of Orange Cassidy versus Shibata as like a match. But then that also sort of speaks to a problem with like an actual Orange Cassidy versus Shibata match that's not supposed to be presented as like something other than like a comedy expo, right? Like right. If Shibata was actually doing the stiff, unrelenting baseball kicks in like the classic Shibata, let's say 2014 style on him, Orange Cassidy's character like doesn't really necessarily track super well with that. Like how does that character respond to getting the PKs and stuff like that? Put his hands in his pockets after taking a PK. No.
A little shocking to me was that the mystery opponent beat Zack Sabre Jr. when they're still building the Zack Sabre Jr. versus Bryan Danielson match. But the mystery opponent, much to nobody's surprise, really, Claudio Castagnoli, the former Cesaro, coming in now, a member of the Blackpool Combat Club. They can always do the thing where it's like, hey, I prepared for you. I wasn't prepared for him. Cool it down for a year, and then next year do Zack Sabre Jr. and Bryan Danielson. What did you think of a Claudio born again here in AEW?
I liked this debut match. I thought Zack Sabre Jr. ended up being a really great opponent for Claudio because the story of this match was super lucid. Zack Sabre Jr. was trying to do his standard work a limb sort of thing. And while it was
Bugs Bunny offense. Yeah.
Yeah. While it was to a certain extent effective on Claudio, it was just too much for this guy to ever really be able to get the arm work or the leg work or anything to really stick. It was a super clean story. I thought it just like, it was a good way of introducing Claudio and, you know, building him up. I liked this debut a lot. I thought this was a really cool match.
Yeah, the IWGP four-way kind of broke down a little bit, and I think that was a communication with Okada and also Okada never working really four-man type of matches. And then in the main event, your AEW champion, Jon Moxley, over Tanahashi, and what was pretty damn good match, I thought. Yeah, you know, there's a reason he's the ace, and he brings it for the big time matches, and he still
does it like that. There's vacation Tanahashi, and then there's big match Tanahashi, and big match Tanahashi's pretty good, man. Big match Tanahashi is there's a reason why he's just like this legendary wrestler. I'm not telling anyone in the audience stuff they don't know, but I mean, I thought that this was going to be a lot more of Moxley having to do a lot of the lift for Tanahashi here, and Tanahashi carried a lot more of the load. It was much closer to a 50-50 effort between the two guys to get to what was, in my opinion, a foregone conclusion this whole time. So the one thing that held this match back from being super interesting is that I just never really believed Tanahashi was going to win this match. Yeah. So, like, you know, it was a very nice exposition, but matches where the outcome is truly in doubt are always more enjoyable for the viewer.
Let's stay in the AEW neighborhood and go over Dynamite. Because this was a show that happened on a TV thing. Kind of an interesting mix of things. We had the Christian Cage promo. We had Danielson and FTR against Gun Club and Max Caster. And look, the Gun Club and Caster are always great foils. Danielson and FTR, interesting combination. Cargo and Layla Gray. Layla Gray has been being used by both companies very frequently. I won't be shocked if one finally signs her. A little bit of a swerve with the baddies. I think, I don't think she's the end game here. I still think my original pick is what's going to happen with that. We had this great match from Cassidy on Forbidden Door. And then we had this match with Ethan Page, which was all about the body slam. And, oh, by the way, Jane by Jefferson Starship has now the rights have cleared, and he now has his old indie theme back. And we had the Blood and Guts match. Chris, where would you like to start on this?
Yeah, you are definitely right that this was a show that happened. I mean, it felt like two different shows. The Blood and Guts show, I guess we'll save that for last. Let's talk on balance, it's like the pre-Blood and Guts part of this show. What a mess. Like the Orange Cassidy.
It was interesting. It was an interesting mess, though, I thought.
Okay. I mean,
okay. Please. Yeah. Feel free. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like, an interesting mess. Sure. Like, it just on the merits, like, yes, the body slam centered match. I can believe it because that's what they do with Orange Cassidy. But it's like, dude, this guy could just be. So he could be so much more important for this company if you just.
So could Ethan Page. That's so could the Ethan weird Page. Thing.
Yes, yes.
Ethan
no,
Page
I
is
I
their
agree with them.
Miz, and that's what's frightening me is he's so much better than the Miz.
I thought the Luchasaurus rebrand as Kane is is fine. It's a step in the right direction. Christian's promos are just like, they are the most you people sort of promos in the world right now.
Now, I've heard something.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
That they're supposed to kind of be shots at WWE's promo style. And I'm like, okay, that's a little too on the nose for me because it's coming off like he's doing a WWE promo. Thought there was a little mix of Gary Hart in there, just a tad.
I got to tell you that kind of argument sort of like rings as
hollow.
Yes, it rings hollow and like a way of rationalizing a bad thing because you mm-hmm. like.
Yes.
Like you're like, this is on your team. So you're like watching it and you're going, oh, like a sports thing. We're like trying to rationalize why a coach is doing something that clearly, like, to anyone who's not a fan of that team looks as though they're cheating, you know, doing something illegal. You're like, oh, well, it could be something else. We don't really know. Who's to say? It could be that. It could be this. It could be very innocuous. You could be telling him his mother is sick. You know, like, I just. not like
yeah,
I'm
Seth,
not really
call me because you're sick.
Your mother called. She's not doing well. My thoughts are with you.
Wait, that's why Christian. Oh, jeez, really? Plug us Patreon.
Patreon.com/DWHG.
Stop. This is a blood and guts match. Look, the War Games match, which is what this is, it's one of my favorite things on Earth. That said, I'm not sure it belongs in the 21st century anymore. I'm worried about it, Chris. I was bored by this match at times.
Okay, I feel better now. It really does feel like the buildy part of the match before the match officially begins just plods. Like, yes. It's not, yeah, for the first, like, after the first 6 minutes, it just loses steam. I'd rather have everyone coming in 1 minute intervals and then we start the match.
They did go ahead. Sorry.
There's just no reason to be doing 3 minute or 4 minute intervals. It's too long.
It's supposed to be two, but they fixed the problem they had with the first Blood and Guts match in that if they did it on pure time in 2 minute intervals, people would be coming in during the commercial breaks, which is what they just did. Wardlow and stuff like that. I mean, remember when Wardlow came in last year and just killed everybody and was such a huge type of thing? It happened during the commercial break. So they avoided that by having people come in after the commercial. So it wasn't exactly 2 minutes at a time. Sometimes it was three. Sometimes it was three and a half. Or it might have been two and a half at most. I might be wrong on my time there. But yeah. You had six on six.
I think it's got to be like 1 minute intervals if you want to have a commercial break. If you're doing it in 1 minute intervals, you can basically do it in 1 minute intervals, go to a commercial break, and then the match officially begins on the other side of the commercial.
Yeah. Here's the other things that are lacking in this modern day. The heat wasn't there for this kind of match. This was not a blow off match of any kind. If the Jericho Appreciation Society was going to lose this match.
The actual heat was internal, right? And like, yes. that was a big problem with the story of this match is what is commentary talking about throughout? Who has the conflict here? Eddie Kingston does want to light Jericho on fire. Eddie kind of crazy like that. But like the real conflict here seems to be between Claudio and Kingston. And that was the thing that we were spotlighting. And even at the end of the match, it's like Claudio and Kingston get this victory over Jericho. Kingston's not satisfied with his victory over Jericho, even though, you know, tapping him out on the top of the steel cage because the officially scored tap out is Matt Martell. But the whole time, what they've really were like, you know, sort of angling you towards is Claudio and Kingston, they got beef. Claudio and Kingston, they got beef. So yeah. It took away the match is about Claudio and Kingston, two guys on the same team, rather than a year-long feud with heat with stakes that is getting decided and settled right now. This is although the Jericho Appreciation Society lost here, it absolutely is not the end of the Jericho Appreciation Society. They lost nothing by losing. And I think that sort of takes away from the stakes of something that you're going to call blood and guts.
Yeah, a few other things. I mean, look, it was 2.0 were great in this match. I thought Daniel Garcia worked his ass off. Santana, unfortunately, looks like I think he tore his ACL on that first move he was trying to do there. And
I believe that Kingston hurt his back is what I was reading.
Yeah, well, I think that might have been selling, but God bless Kingston. Chris, are we on break? You can hear it audibly during the match when they're on top of the cage. The war game, and see, this is where old man Hawkins comes in. People are going to start yelling at me on Twitter and in the Discord, and that's fine. I'll take the heat for this. But one of the things about the War Games originally, and when it was NWA WCW, was the claustrophobia of War Games. It had a ceiling on it, so you couldn't do too much, even though they were trying to do, you know, doomsday devices to JJ Dillon and stuff like that, but you also couldn't do a lot of flippy do stuff necessarily. It was hard to do it. And so it was nothing but punching, kicking, trying to beat a guy up. This felt like a very indie-rific match with a lot of the indie hardcore type of stuff you do, tables, chairs, bringing in the thumbtacks and stuff like that. So it becomes basically a Lethal Lockdown type of match.
But worst of all, then they leave the cage.
Then they leave the cage, which has become a standard now for every Hell in a Cell War Games type of thing. It's no longer special. You're expecting them to do that.
Well, the cage no longer has the ability to contain them, which it is an obstacle rather than a jail cell that they have to settle it out. Like, what, two men enter the cage, one man leaves. Like, yes. When both men can leave and then electively choose to scale to the top of the cage. Yes, we've all been trained that this is a part of a cage match because of the Undertaker Mick Foley match in 1997. I'd actually argue everyone looked at that at the time. The problem was the violence in that. I think the problem is the trope of leaving the damn cage.
Yes, because it's supposed to be, this is going to be settled in this cage and you cannot get out of this cage. But it's like, oh,
I love
the
match, by the way.
More.
Great, you know, sore than you remember it, but like a great, intense, really visceral moment when Funk comes out, everything, really yes. Awesome match. But like, it very much felt like that's kind of what we were building off of. You had Sammy Guevara wanting to essentially do the tribute spot to that, going through the table. And then the double tap out in the top of the cage. Again, sort of, this was not a cage match. This was a platform match that was disguised as a cage match that we needed to get to the platform part of it. It was a scaffold match. It was
a Skywalker's match. Exactly. Yeah. And it's weird because here's a note I had watching the first 5 minutes of this. I go, Claudio Castagnoli is a big, big dude. Like, he's a power dude. He's a dude who, you know, Vader Sid type to me in some ways. And he has the softest offense in terms of damage done that I've ever seen in a War Games, because he's giving the guys the uppercuts and just Sammy's getting up and then just doing flips after that. It's like, no, dude, you're getting, it goes to indie selling a lot of times where it's just like you are taking, and strong style selling where you're just taking the most vicious uppercuts and then you get up to do your flippy stuff and you're just like, okay, fine. But I want to get to a point that you kind of alluded to. I thought you were going to steal my thunder and you didn't. And I was happy about that. But Chris, the entire psychological build to this blood and guts match revolved around fireballs. We didn't get a single fireball in this match. And I thought for certain, Chekhov's gun says if it appears in the first beat, it's going to fire off in the third. I thought we were going to get a fireball at some point in here to help with the end of the match, but we didn't. And I was kind of disappointed in the storytelling on that end.
The rubbing alcohol was,
I
like,
thought that was going to get
an
fire.
AEW dropped storyline in a match. But yes, I'm with you. You built it around a fireball. Jericho has been calling himself the wizard because he does fireballs.
Yes.
Neither, they're all wearing red. The color of fire, which I guess also tracks with blood and guts, but like the Red Wizard should do a fireball at some point during the match. He can miss. He doesn't actually have to connect with the fireball.
No, I thought he'd get a fireball in his own face.
Right. Yes. Or point. He could get the fireball. I either one, but like, you're right. Narratively, it wasn't like at any point like Kingston was like, I need to throw you off the top of something or whatever. It was, I'm gonna light you on fire. The great image at the end of that last match was him walking down to the ring with the gas can.
Yeah.
The whole point of conflict in this match has been centered around fire. And although we got what did we get? Kendo sticks, and we got tables.
Let me hold you over. The visual of Eddie Kingston just walking through the entire hill, just whacking guy with the Singapore cane was fantastic, I thought.
No, that was very funny. Like the casual just like whacking him like he's playing Streets of Rage 4 or something. I enjoyed that a lot. But I think there were problems with the narrative structure of this match that kept the match from achieving more. I'm also with you on the selling thing. But, like, you know, on the positive notes, it's like 2.0, Claudio.
Led like stuck pigs. That visual, that visual of Angelo Parker hanging from the cage. I was like, how did he get out of there? I forgot how he slipped out of there to hang over the edge like that. But yeah, both of those dudes were just taking beatings all night with like the fork and stuff, and also Daniel Garcia as well with the spikes in the I did love the homage to Abdul the Butcher by the commentary team when he started sticking the fork in his head. Continue, sorry.
Yeah, I mean that I don't know that I have a whole lot more to say about it. I like Claudio as a new member of the Blackpool Combat Club. I mean, I think he works as good, if not better, than Toothless Timmy. I mean, the Blackpool Combat Club is a really stacked in terms of talent faction now. Sneakily one of the most talented factions that's been put together in a very, very long time. So it's good that they went over here, but I just thought that the match didn't, even with them going over, having all the infighting at the end of the match made the victory feel hollow.
Yeah. And I think also part of, I mean, that's the danger of porting over this Daniel Bryan or the Bryan Danielson story to Claudio with 3 days build off of a pay-per-view that a tenth of your audience watched is part of the problem. I mean, they put it over on commentary pretty well, and I think that was great. I also think a slight missed opportunity, and you may disagree with me heavily here, and that's fine. I want to hear a contrarian view if you disagree with me. It's that this was a chance to kind of rebrand Daniel Garcia and Wheeler Yuta to being a little bit more on the vicious side versus what their current things are. Daniel Garcia being, you know, a very technical wrestler to get you into holds and things like that, and Wheeler Yuta being more aerial. Like, he got the one elbow spot that was planned with all three of them doing the elbows type of thing, but Wheeler Yuta.
No, I'm with you. Like, both those guys need a hard nose second layer to let you, they both would benefit. Because, like, right now, to me, Wheeler Yuta almost feels like the Sting of the Blackpool Combat Club rather than the Young Project. Like, this is a guy who eventually all these men are going to look at and go like, he's not strong enough to be one of us.
Yeah, he feels soft. He feels like he's still doing his aerial stuff to get him through as opposed to being a badass to get him through. And Daniel Garcia needs a little bit more sadism in his offense in terms of being a guy who, look, he can work a limb, but he's trying to break your arm as opposed to get the win, those types of things. I wanted both of them to come out feeling tougher than they were versus feeling like, and pun almost intended, red shirts for Star Trek in some way. I thought there could have been a little bit more character development with those two within the confines of this being the most gruesome match you'll ever find. And especially with Wheeler, was Wheeler Yuta in Anarchy in the Arena? I don't think he was. I think it was, he was not. It was Moxley and Dan. So this would have been a nice time to have built something with him a little bit more here, in my opinion. But still,
and then I think there's one other mistake that was made here on this show.
Okay.
Which is that John Moxley, if he is going to be the interim champion, and if the interim champion is going to have any sort of like heft or interest at all, or you want to make the unification match have any heft or interest at all, Moxley needs to come out on the top of the show and address the AEW audience. Like, he actually needs to feel like a champion rather than like a dude in a faction. I just thought
coordinate him.
No, right. He addresses the crowd. The first, rather than having these like random matches, like Orange Cassidy body slamming Ethan Page. I'm going to just throw this out there. That could wait until Dark. You throw that on Rampage. Have Moxley come out during that same time and give a 10-minute address, set up a little bit of intrigue between him and Punk, a little bit of like tension between him and Punk, that he wants to stay champion, that he loves being champion for the Blackpool Combat Club. And tonight we're going to come out, we're going to win this match because I'm champion, Blackpool Combat Club's on top, and that's how it's going to be now, or something. Like you just make this guy feel big.
Yeah, I agree. I think we move over to our Money in the Bank preview. You done? Are we done with AEW, you think?
I think we're done with AEW, I think.
And I don't mean it. I mean, look, it's still a fun match to watch. I still like the blood.
There was actually, I mean, it was not, no, it was a totally, it was an enjoyable match.
It was a mess.
Absent though. Context. Yes. Right, basically, until they got to the top of the cage, I was enjoying the match just fine. It wasn't like I hated life once they got on top of the cage. Claudio being able to swing Jericho from the top of the cage, very impressive. Well, yeah, again, it wasn't like I was in abject misery or whatever. But for me, it became sort of WWE and lost in the sauce, trying to do too much in the top of the cage phase of the match.
Right now, six matches announced for Money in the Bank. We are recording before SmackDown occurs. SmackDown, been a pretty solid show past couple weeks. I hate to give it short shrift, given given that you know it has had its high points at times, especially Gunther, who is just fantastic in everything he does, and you know, some of the women on that show have been really, really good as well. But there's no Roman Reigns on this show to defend the Unified Championship. So that means there's only the chance, because they love to do this at Money in the Bank. Looks like the women's winner is going to cash in on that night, because they love to do at least one cash in on the night of. So if you're placing bets that either Bianca or Ronda Rousey is champions at the end of the night, might want to put some money on. They might lose it in some way. But we will begin with Theory, your United States champion, taking on Bob Lashley. And how is this not murder death in some way, Chris?
I mean, Bob Lashley, I think, needs to win the title here. The people like Bob Lashley. Bob Lashley likes the people. And Bob Lashley should be the champion at the end of this match. Bob Lashley.
Do we possibly get Vince McMahon shenanigans? Because Vince has been a part of this show.
No, because that would be Vince McMahon heel. And as we all know, Vince McMahon, in his character and his actions, is beloved by the fans and the people and the American public writ large. Thank you, Vince. And we are all with him every step of this journey.
The chances he was on that Jeffrey Epstein plane at one point.
Yeah, no, there's ever a guy, I don't know, but I know, I feel like Vince has been to Epstein Island.
I think he was possibly in that ledger, which nobody from that ledger will ever be put on trial, which is a shame. Okay, anyways, moving on. for the Undisputed Tag Team titles, the Usos, Jay and Jimmy, taking on the Street Profits of Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford. We've been going back and forth in one-on-one matches for the past 4 weeks. Can the Street Profits beat the Usos in a tag team match? Because the story is that they can't.
I think the story is going to be that they can't.
I think the story is going to be they can't too. I am so frustrated by that at times. I'm just like, what are we doing? And is it possible that the Street Profits break up here?
That would be interesting. That, like, they can't, and that this is the end of the Profits, and like Dawkins, or I'm sorry, Montez turns on Dawkins. So I feel like I feel like, look, if you're going to, the typical move here is you make the guy you want to build heel.
Yeah.
And even though Tez feels like a natural baby face and everything like that would then mean you're making Dawkins the heel to build Dawkins. Also in this company, baby faces don't tend to fare super well out of tag team. So I'd almost be rooting for Tez to be booked as a heel coming out of the Street Profits.
Both women's titles are on the line tomorrow. Ronda Rousey, your champion of SmackDown, taking on Natalya in what has been just a dreadful, dreadful feud at times.
but with so much potential to really cross lines and get really real, and it's disappointing that we just stopped at the water's edge of being interesting.
Oh, really? Because it felt like they crossed the lines, even though they
They did. No, then they pulled back. That's what I'm saying. Like you're right. No, we got into the water, Jeff, and then we went back out onto the beach, and I just don't understand why.
Ronda Rousey has opinions, and Natty and her sister like to show their boobs. That's, you know, that's pretty much what this feud is. is there any chance that the boat beats Ronda Rousey here?
I feel like Ronda's going to win this one. I just, I, I, She Rhonda to me seems like, yeah, kind of like basically keep her emotionally fine with life and everything. And I think she needs a title retention here right now, just emotionally.
Just a dreadful set of promos. I mean, especially the one on Friday with Natty dressed up as Ronda Rousey in a baby carriage. I couldn't believe that. Over on the Raw side, Bianca Belair, your champion, taking on Carmella. And what a lot of people are dismissing, but again, Jeff Hawkins, oddly enough, Carmella defender. Carmella's going to be game. She's going to do what she does. It's not going to be a 4-5-star match by any means. Probably won't even be a 4-star. Might not even be a 3-star. But Carmella comes to do what she does. And she's probably going to get a few moves here. They're going to look impressive. I think she's going to over-deliver here. No way in hell she wins this match. But, I think this will be... I posited last week whether or not Carmella and Bianca lead to somebody else in this match. I don't think that happens, but I think there might be an allusion to it at some point. We'll get to that later. But Bianca, Carmella, do you see it any different other than Bianca, who, yes, she's the champ, and she's been stuck in this Asuka Becky Lynch feud. Are we going to build her after this, Chris?
I think Carmella beats her in about 6 minutes.
Really?
No, of course not, Jeff.
I had to ask the question just to buy into
I wanted to see how straight I could get that answer. I couldn't.
You couldn't get that one past.
No, I couldn't. It was too hard. It was too hard to actually commit to that one. I tried. And I should be applauded for that. But I think that Bianca and Carmella will have exactly the match you just described.
You're asking for applause after. Okay. You're just self-promotional all today, aren't
Patreon.com /DWATG.
And then the two things that were supposed to sell out a stadium, but ends up back in a casino. Your Money in the Bank ladder matches. On the women's side, Lacey Evans, welcome back from maternity leave /injury versus Alexa Bliss versus Liv Morgan versus Raquel Rodriguez, the ever smiling Raquel Rodriguez. Chris, this is creepy. The amount that they have her smile. She is just smile, 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 smile. Versus Asuka versus Shotzi versus Becky Lynch.
The Raquel smiling thing, it's not going well. It would be it's really, really bad. But like, it'd be really good if the smiling was just a veneer for her to be like a complete rageaholic, and whenever she was she snaps and then goes back to smiling, and it's like this like creepy unsettling smile.
What I want Raquel to take a bump on a ladder and be required to keep the smile on her face. And I want to hear the production truck where Vince is screaming into the mic, "Damn it, you smile, girl!
I want you to sell, but with a smile.
With
damn
a smile,
it!
Smile, you're a happy baby face. Damn it!
Big teeth. I want big teeth.
Big white teeth. Now, who do you have winning the briefcase? And do they cash in? I guess the only way they cash in if the women's Money in the Bank ladder match is first. Somebody's cashing in, I think. But let's see if you can guess which title they cash in on and who wins this match, Chris.
I'm going to say it's either Alexa or Liv, and the cash in is maybe on... cash in, I guess, maybe beyond Bianca. I feel like they wouldn't have whoever wins the Money in the Bank cash in on Ronda, so it would have to be on Bianca if they were going to cash in. I'll go with Alexa.
Okay. The only way I could see them cashing in on Ronda is if, say, like Shayna Baszler comes in and turns on Ronda for any reason and beats her down, and then somebody comes in and cashes in. You know, that cheap win that really doesn't get you over as much. I could see that happening. I am going chalk here because I think, oddly enough, I think the poster this time is a spoiler. I think we've done this entire convoluted, stupid, can Becky get into the Money in the Bank ladder match story for a heel just to have her come in and beat Bianca again for the Women's Raw Championship to go back to that story for SummerSlam.
Oh, and that would have to be another short, like, or at least it would tease that it was going to be another like 12-second finish. But like, yes, Becky would then have to win that match.
Yes,
on the cash in on Bianca. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
We're replaying the hits here. I think Becky Lynch wins this Money in the Bank and cashes it on Bianca after the match, gets the title, and then it becomes Bianca chasing for SummerSlam. Let's call that shot there. On the men's side, Seth freaking Rollins versus Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus versus Omos versus Sami Zayn versus Riddle versus a player to be determined, because the scheduled Kevin Owens versus Ezekiel Elias, Elrod, whoever match was supposed to be for the last slot here. I believe that will be rectified on SmackDown tonight in some way. Don't know if it's going to be Kevin Owens or not. Might be a guy like Ricochet. But who do you have winning the men's Money in the Bank contract?
So Elrod is not in this match, is what you're saying?
Not yet.
I mean, if Elrod was in the match, you know, a little bit different. But absent that, I'm going with...
See, hold on, let me pause you there. You being straight on that one was great. That was fantastic. You know, if Elrod's in this match, the whole thing changes.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different factor. But I'm going with Seth Rollins.
I agree. I think this is Seth Rollins, and I think he fails in his cash-in. I think they try and do the rerun of oh my God, they're going to do that, aren't they? SummerSlam. Brock and Roman are at SummerSlam. Seth is going to cash in again during the match, and this time he's going to fail instead of being successful.
Seth having the briefcase also gives them the ability to continue this strange bloodline storyline absent Roman Reigns, because you can have tension between the Usos and Seth. And they'll all pretend that they're on the same page and they're not on the same page. You don't necessarily have to have Roman on every week to have it still move along with some degree of intrigue.
Does almost take a bump, flat back bump onto a ladder.
Yeah, but he has to sell it while smiling.
I think McIntyre and Sheamus are going to be game. My God, Sheamus has been doing this forever, and it's somehow he's still walking, which is amazing. Riddle's going to be interesting in this match, I think. Why would you ever do bare feet in ladder matches? I don't know, with all that jagged metal around. And if KO's the guy here, you know, he's a pro at it. He and Sami Zayn been doing this forever. And I think it becomes a little bit of a KO Sami Zayn ladder match at times to distract from the fact that Seth Rollins is getting this briefcase. And we are going all the way back to WrestleMania in Santa Clara for SummerSlam. Yeah, that's our preview of Money in the Bank. Chris, you've already plugged it 400 times on the show already. Tell them about Don't Worry About the Government.
Yeah, Don't Worry About the Government dropped two new episodes here in the last week. We're like back in the swing of things. So if you want to go, you can also participate. We've got polls and stuff on the Patreon. Like, people were discussing, you know, news and that sort of thing over at patreon.com/DWATG. Been hearing good things about that all through this program. Patreon.com/DWATG. You can find the show on Twitter, at least for the time being, at DWATG. And then I'm on Discord as well. Nov something or other is the numbers. You'll find it. Like, there's not like
DM him. He'll give you the Discord link.
Yeah, you just DM me. That's fine.
You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Shows including The Flagship with Rich and Joe, Music on the Mat with our friend Andrew Rich, who just dropped a new episode. He was at Forbidden Door Live. 5-star Match Game with Joe Gagne. Etc. etc. Anything you want in wrestling, Voice of Wrestling probably has you covered. I am also on another show during the week. I'm over.
Almost anything, right? Like, they've been stifling a certain show focused on one of the great wrestlers of the 1990s for the better part of 8 years now. But maybe that'll change.
I do hot takes on the Dynamite show over on Fight Game Media on Wednesday nights. Usually drops by about 10 p.m. Pacific. On all your podcatching devices, that's at patreon.com/fightgamemedia, all one word. Again, for those of you who have already reached out, I appreciate it. For those who haven't, don't worry about it. Just a nice just nice, happy thoughts for me on Thursday, and I hope to see you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.